Hello, this is Lucas Carlson from CenturyLink and CenturyLink Labs. I'm super excited because today we get to talk with Ben Golub, CEO of Docker, about how he came to Docker, what Docker is doing, how it's changing the world, and this is an awesome treat to hear about somebody really leading the way with a technology that I think is going to be one of the basic technologies we all use in our command line experience every day within the next few years. So, Ben, thank you so much for coming. Thank you. Tell us about your background, about yourself, and stuff.
Sure.
How'd you get to Docker?
Sure. So, well, first of all, thank you, Lucas, for inviting me. And as I always tell anybody who wants to give props for what's happening with Docker, the real props go to the community. But my background, this is my fifth startup. The third is as CEO, so I've been around the block a bit. My path started. I grew up in Cupertino, so my first Silicon Valley job was cutting apricots, and they paved over the orchard and they built Apple headquarters there. In between, worked for Sun, tried to start a business school in Tashkent, my first failed startup. Worked at VeriSign for 8 years trying to build up sort of the foundations for internet commerce. Was CEO of Plaxo, and immediately prior to this was CEO of Gluster, which was open source storage. Eventually became part of Red Hat. And yeah. So, you know, I've seen a lot of the good, I've seen a lot of the bad, and as you may know, DocCloud, the company that is now Docker, was originally known as DocCloud. It was a platform as a service company, and they were started in 2011. I went to speak to Solomon in February of last year when he had in his mind the notion of taking sort of the fundamental container technology that was used at DocCloud, open sourcing it, and trying to create a company around it. And the more I spoke to him, the more I understood his vision, the more I really saw what this could be in terms of, you know, breaking developers free from a lot of the really horrible things that they have to deal with on a daily basis and allowing them to just build great, great applications, and similarly freeing the sysadmins from all of the chaos and allowing them to build, you know, scalable, stable solutions. It just seemed like a natural, and as you said, it has the opportunity to the potential to change the world of development at least, and you know, so far that seems to be happening, so I'm really pleased.
Yeah, that's awesome. You came from Gluster. Gluster is also a great technology and has been really it's fascinating because I think one of the concerns that I've heard most from the Docker community is how is the file system stuff going to work with Docker? And I'm not saying that Gluster is going to be the solution, but it's great that the CEO of Docker used to be the CEO of, of a file system company. Is there anything there?
First, the guys at Gluster just released a really interesting integration with Gluster and Docker. So that was Fred Kotz and Harsha Vardhana who did that. But I think more generally, you know, what we're recognizing is that having built Docker, you know, we now need to put in place the primitives that enable people to do the kind of things that they want to do with storage, the kind of things they want to do with networking, the kind of things they want to do with security. And I think our general philosophy at Docker is our job is to build the right primitives into Docker, or the, you know, to use the analogy of a shipping container, put the hooks and holes in the right places, and then let people build what it is that they want to build. You know, we don't want to be in the business of saying you should run Docker on any particular operating system or run it on a VM versus not on a VM. We don't want to be in the business of telling you how to orchestrate Docker containers. We want to make sure that we build the fundamental technologies in there so that people can create an ecosystem and a set of solutions around Docker.
That's really cool. So let's back up to people that might not be as familiar with Docker. Who should use Docker? What is it for? Should developers use it? Ops people? IT? Who do you think is the right audience for Docker?
I think Docker is designed to make it really change the way that people build, ship, and run applications. And so there's a great deal of benefit for developers using Docker, and there's a great deal of benefit for ops type in using Docker. And a lot of the benefit actually comes from the fact that we draw a nice, clean separation between dev and ops, so that, you know, devs, if you will, can be really flexible and creative, inside the container, and yet the outside of the container always stays the same, which enables ops guys to build stable, secure, automatable systems. But, you know, at a very fundamental level, Docker lets you take any application and its dependencies, package them in a lightweight framework, lightweight container that will run virtually anywhere. And today that means you can take any Linux application or components of a Linux application, containerize them, and then run them in that same container on pretty much any Linux server. And it doesn't matter whether it's Red Hat or Ubuntu, whether it's physical or virtual, whether it's at Amazon or Rackspace or SoftLayer or Google, and in fact move back and forth between them.
That's really cool. So it's for the developers to work in the container, and it's for the ops guys to manage the Docker system itself. Is that right?
That's right. Now, of course, some developers also act like ops folks and vice versa. So, but you know, the set of issues that people worry about in terms of application creation and management get really neatly separated, sort of on the inside of the container, if you will, and the outside of the container hooks into whatever infrastructure management people decide is best for them. You know, and what we like to say is that, you know, as opposed to the sort of the VM model, which says an application is really indistinguishable from the application server and they're tightly bound, in a sort of a Docker world, they're separated. So applications can be whatever they want to be and not have to worry in advance about what the infrastructure is going to be. And similarly, you know, people who are building infrastructure can build the infrastructure that they want. And if that's a set of commodity servers that are all running Red Hat, that's great. If it's an OpenStack, that's great. If it's VMware VMs, that's great. If it's outsourcing the whole thing to Amazon, that's great too.
Got it. So how is Docker different than Linux containers? Linux containers have been around for quite a while. So what does Docker bring to the world that Linux containers didn't have?
Right. Well, so there's sort of core technology that we built on top of, and we have to give a lot of credit to the people who built the underlying technology. But you know, before Docker, Linux containers were sort of the provenance of people like Google who had specialized tools and training. They weren't portable between different environments. There wasn't an ecosystem around them. And for the most part, they were a tool that was used by sysadmins in very specialized organizations, and they weren't useful for developers. You know, we like to draw the analogy between Docker and shipping containers a lot. And what I sort of like to say is that sort of the base technology was like steel boxes. And what we've done is kind of make them all the same size and put hooks and holes in all the same places.
Fascinating. So I know you said you wouldn't do this, but we got a question from one of the people in Twitter. Matt Apperson asked, what Docker-based host OS will go the distance? And he was mentioning, is it going to be CoreOS? Is it going to be Red Hat? What do you guys think is the best way to run Docker?
I think the best way to run Docker is on a Linux server with a sufficiently modern kernel. And we worked really hard to work well with Red Hat, so we're shipping with RHEL. We've worked really hard to work with Canonical, so we're shipping in Ubuntu. We work on VMs. We have something called Boot to Docker, which is a great solution if you want to sort of very minimal OS. CoreOS is another really minimal OS. So I think the question is not which of these will work best for Docker. I think it's which works best in your environment. And there are some people who want to use Docker in a really radical way on a minimal OS, and they're looking at things like CoreOS or Atomic. And then there are people who want a full stack, in which case they're looking at, you know, RHEL or Ubuntu or something like that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So are Linux containers going to replace virtual machines? I know that we've been hearing in the news a lot about this, and I'm curious what you have to say about that.
So what I believe is that there are a lot of use cases that people put VMs to where VMs really weren't suited. So I think you're going to see a lot of use cases where people are using Linux containers instead of VMs. I think there are a lot of use cases where VMs make sense and Linux containers don't make sense. And there are a lot of use cases where the right answer is to run a bunch of containers inside a VM. Only instead of having 1,000 VMs because you have 1,000 applications, you know, you have 10 VMs which are each running 100 containers.
And can you give us a general sense of why somebody would pick a VM over a Linux container? What value does the VM bring?
Yeah. Well, so certainly if you're trying to mix different OS families, you know, you want to run a Windows app on a Linux box or vice versa, you're going to need a VM. I think similarly, if what people are really trying to do is build flexible infrastructure and they really want to move and allocate servers or virtual servers to people, then a VM makes sense. But if you're trying to create applications, modify them quickly, burst them, across large numbers of servers or burst them to the cloud, or if you're trying to build an application from lots of loosely coupled components and you want to sort of containerize each of them, that's where Docker really shines.
And so the kind of general idea here would be that a more consumer-facing thing might be like a virtual desktop could be for virtual machines, but more server-side stuff might be better suited to containers. Is that a general guideline?
Well, again, I think it's if you want to combine, you want to run an things in one operating system family on a machine that has a different host operating system, then you need a VM. But if you're trying to build a system for creating and packaging and moving applications around and linking the components of an application together, you don't need a full VM. You don't need to treat, and you shouldn't treat that application or that component as if it were part of a whole server. And that's really where you want to use Linux containers. It's interesting because I think most people probably don't realize that on your Android phone, you've got a bunch of Linux containers. When you download Angry Bird, you're not downloading a VM. You're downloading something in a Linux container, and you know that it's isolated so it doesn't mess up your address book. We do the same thing, only we do it for the far more complicated, far more in-depth issue of things that are sort of running in the background on servers.
That's fascinating. I think that really helps people think about it. So do you think that the world is going to go back to bare metal hosting and then do Linux containers on bare metal rather than, virtual machines were kind of cloud 1.0. Do you see us going back to dedicated hardware and adding Linux containers to them? Is that the next generation of cloud, in your opinion?
Well, so what I'll say is I think Linux containers are far more flexible. They're much easier to spin up. They're much easier to destroy. And you can get significantly better performance and density out of them. So I certainly think you're going to see a lot of usage of Docker on bare metal in the hosting environment. On the other hand, Docker and Linux containers in general don't yet have a lot of the features that people have come to expect from VMs just because the VMs have been around for a lot longer. So, I don't want to say that, cloud 1.0 is VM, cloud 2 is Docker or containers. But I will say that Cloud 2.0 will have a very healthy mix of Docker and VMs.
Very cool. So that kind of raises another question, because especially in large enterprise, a lot of development is still done on Windows machines, and right now Docker is highly tied to Linux. So is Docker going to always be tied to Linux, or could it potentially manage even virtual machines, regardless of its Windows or whatever virtual machine you have?
Yeah, well, so what I'll say is today you can put VMs inside of Docker and you can put Docker inside of VMs. So to some extent what you're talking about you can already do. You can also run Docker host on top of a Windows machine using boot to Docker. We're supported in Azure, so we've got some of the way there. I think what you'll see is that Docker right now supports a whole bunch of different flavors of Linux containers. We've also built the primitives in place so that we can extend that to things like Solaris zones or BSD jails, which are more associated with Unix. And of course, the natural place to go from there is to use something like Docker to manage things that look like containers inside of a Windows environment. And that's certainly something that we're exploring. We're talking to a lot of folks about doing it, but it won't be this year.
Got it. So eventually you will be able to run Windows apps within Docker, but it's not going to happen in the short term.
That's right. And I think more importantly, you'll be able to create Windows apps using Docker to containerize all the components and then run them anywhere.
Right.
Or at least on any Windows machine.
Right. So, but it'll still be running Linux applications, but it's on a Windows machine.
So you know, Docker relies on a Linux kernel. So we need a Linux kernel somewhere. So right now you can create Linux apps and run them on a really lightweight Docker VM on a Windows box. Where we want to get to in the near future is, where you can be really flexible in terms of creating Windows apps and run them on a Windows box.
Yeah, so we've seen some of these some new hosting providers like Tudum come out mm-hmm. with pure Docker hosted yeah. stuff, and that we've only seen that in startups, but big cloud offerings like Amazon and even CenturyLink Cloud could go into this space as well. And do you see that as part of the future too?
Absolutely, we're really excited. We've at DockerCon, which was 2 weeks ago, we were joined by large numbers of people who are creating sort of Docker as a service offerings. That includes people who are sort of Docker from the ground up, like Tudum or Orchard, as well as larger providers like Rackspace and Google and Amazon and Azure, who sort of have announced Docker support. And of course, CenturyLink, we're really excited to be working with as well.
Great. So what use cases make most sense for Docker? So for people that haven't yet used it, how are enterprises and large companies that you've been interacting with adopting Docker? Where's the lowest hanging fruit? Where would it make sense if mm-hmm. you hadn't done something? Is there a project? Is there a kind of project where it's you should try Docker with that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I always recommend that anybody who wants to get started with Docker should go to our site and do a 15-minute tutorial that we have online. It takes 15 minutes to get through, and when I made it through successfully and our CFO made it through successfully, we knew that we had something that was easy to use. But I think what you start to see is most organizations tend to start sort of on one end of the software development lifecycle. So starting with a developer and saying, okay, how can I make the developer's life easy and sort of make this path that goes from developer through test, QA, staging to production work well. And then once they've gotten that sort of use case one down, then they start looking at, hey, how can I use Docker to scale in production, whether that's across clusters or between clouds, et cetera. So I think most people start with use case number one, and they generally start with stateless apps just because that's sort of the easiest. And what I think they often find is that by using Docker, it's much faster to develop apps. I think they also find that you can create a system where you can go from dev to test to staging to production in minutes rather than in weeks, and have something that goes smoothly rather than having things break at every step along the way and have people pointing fingers at every step along the way. That's what we hear from people like Gilt and eBay and others who use Docker, and they say it went from weeks to minutes. Nobody points fingers, and basically the developer pushes a button. The container gets built automatically, gets picked up by the automated testing system, and 90% of the time it passes and it goes directly into production. And the 10% of the time when it doesn't work, it's really clear whether the issue is inside the container and development needs to fix something, or it's outside container and ops needs to fix something.
Yeah, I think that one of the really cool projects out there is around the CI/CD pipeline stuff. I know Drone is doing a pure Docker stuff, but I also know that some of the big guys, Jenkins, are working on incorporating more Docker into some of the more traditional tooling for mm-hmm. CI/CD, and I think that really makes sense. And for people that need kind of a first application to try to Dockerize, would APIs or something around like a modern API app, maybe a Node app, make sense for Docker?
I think that'd be a good, easy place to go. Again, what I'll say is if you go to the Docker website, there are 50 different use cases that are published. And then to your point about things like Jenkins, one of the great things about Docker being so sort of radically open and sort of embracing the whole open source community ethos is that we've got first-class integrations with Chef, Puppet, Salt, Ansible, Jenkins, Travis, And if you go on GitHub and you search for Docker projects, there are over 7,000 that have been done. So you know, there's this huge ecosystem of tooling and projects around Docker. If you go to Docker's hub, you'll also see that there are some 16,000 applications that have already been Dockerized that the community has published. So, you know, lots of good use cases to look at, lots of good base components to get started with, and lots of great tools that allow you to sort of build what you want with Docker as a, you know, kind of a Lego kit.
That's really cool. So if that's kind of the best place for adopting Docker, what's the worst place? What are some of the biggest challenges and problems in adopting Docker into real life use cases right now? Where is it weakest?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, I mean, we just released 1.0, so I'm always want to make sure people understand that, you know, this is a 15-month-old project, and Docker Inc. is 42 people and a pet turtle. So keeping that in mind. They can't even afford good headsets. I think that certainly, you know, Docker is not a VM. And if what you want is a VM and you really understand what you want is a VM versus Docker, then you shouldn't use Docker. Certainly if you're trying to mix operating systems, if you've got an app where you really need to be able to freeze state and live migrate, we just don't have that functionality built in yet. But things are coming. On the other hand, what I encourage people to do is sort of use Docker and containers in general as an opportunity to rethink a lot of their long-held assumptions. Because I think a lot of the tooling and the methodology we've sort of built around ourselves assumes that, you know, application equals application server, and that VMs are hard to build, take a long time to spin up, et cetera, and are expensive. And in the case of a container right there, you can create them in milliseconds, you can destroy them in milliseconds, you can migrate them easily. And so as a result, a lot of the sort of pain that we've and complications that we've put into things to manage all of our apps as if they were servers, you can kind of rethink and throw out.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. So in a few weeks, I'll be interviewing Solomon on this podcast. And for him, I'm going to be going a lot more into the technical weeds and asking him a lot of those kind of questions. But for you, I'm mm-hmm. particularly curious. As CEO, how will Docker make money? Because I think a lot of the ecosystem around Docker right now does have a concern. You know, are we just building something that the Docker guys are going to eat our lunch? Quay originally had some private hosted Docker repositories, and now with the Docker Hub, now that's Docker has that as well. So, how is Docker planning to make money?
Good question. So we've actually tried to be pretty transparent in terms of how we're planning to make money. And I think we're also trying very hard to be good stewards. We know that we've got an open platform, and there are going to be people who build on top of and below us in that platform, and some of those things will compete with what Docker Inc. does, and some won't. And that's okay, because we want the best tools to win. A few things that I guess I'll say that we won't do. We will never disadvantage any competitor by messing around with open source or messing with the API. So we drive nice, clean APIs that we use and everybody else uses. We don't have any hidden roadmaps. All the work that's done on Docker Engine is done out in the open. The governance is out in the open. We've committed to not doing open core, so we're not going to create some commercial version of Docker that's better than the open source, or some commercial version of open Docker Engine that's better than the open source engine. We've also, with that having said, what are we planning to do? We've launched Docker Hub. We've launched commercial support, so we're offering commercial support for Docker. Docker Hub today has a lot of tools around sort of content and collaboration and workflow for that CI/CD use case. And right now it's delivered purely as a service. We've also got lots of people who have expressed an interest in being able to bring Docker Hub on-premise or to extend its functionality to sort of more production type use cases, management, monitoring, and orchestration of containers. So those are the directions that we're going in to make money. Again, what we think is that we've drawn a nice clean line between Docker and what's open source, and are committed to maintaining that as a platform that will allow, you know, a lot of different tools to develop, and some will compete with us, some won't. And again, we think that the best tools will win.
Yeah, this is really fascinating. You know, seeing companies grow up in an open source way rather than you look at older companies like VMware that have built out great companies building great software that have been adopted by every Fortune 1000 out there. And it's fascinating to see different approaches. And this open source stuff is a really interesting way to embrace a community, but also build a business. And so you launched Docker Hub, and that's an amazing thing. It's really cool to see this, because for me, I've had a foot in system administration for a large part of my career. I've been kind of doing the DevOps thing for a very long time, and I've run large clustered systems. I've written the code for large clustered systems. And it's fascinating to see things like GitHub come out and make coding collaborative.
Yeah.
We've had version control for many decades.
Sure.
And those version controlling tools were things that we could use maybe internally and kludgily within our own team. But now GitHub just blasts that out of the sky. It's just anyone in the world can collaborate with you, and it makes it terrifically easy to work together, collaborate on open source software, on systems, on code, with people you might never have met.
Right.
And I think that things like the success of Bitcoin have come out of this. It's, you know, whether Bitcoin could have survived as an open source project before the open collaborative stuff that like GitHub existed is, I think, a big question. And so one of the things that I think is so cool about the Docker Hub is that it does, for the DevOps community, for the system administrator community, a similar thing to what GitHub did for developers.
Yeah.
Is that what you intended? Is this what you meant to do?
Yeah, so I mean, I think what we wanted to enable is a lot of different kinds of collaboration. You know, again, I think, you know, we've gone from a world where, you know, apps were long-lived, proprietary, monolithic, and deployed to a single server, to a world where their, you know, development is iterative and constant, it's built from lots of loosely coupled components, tends to be open, and tends to be deployed across, you know, huge numbers of servers. And so we wanted to create the collaboration tools for that environment, which means making it really easy for developers to collaborate with each other, easy for them to collaborate with sysadmins and DevOps types, and really provide the tools that makes DevOps not a fantasy, but a reality. Because I think that you know, you were thinking a lot about the sort of cultural and business implications of open source, and I think that Docker brings along some other really important cultural and business implications, but one of them is sort of recognizing that you know, there's a set of concerns that developers have. Developers tend to like to experiment, try new things, break things, and ops, you know, tends to like to have things be automated, consistent, secure, performant, all of those good things, and they're both right. But getting them to agree on a set of tools and a set of methodologies is really difficult, because, you know, what one person does endangers the job of the other person, right? I think with Docker and with Docker Hub in particular, we sort of get the best of both worlds, in that you can be really creative and share and reuse components as a developer, and yet as a sysadmin, there's a nice clean boundary between it. You can automate the whole testing process, and you can have a lot more consistency in how you deploy to production. So for me, it's all really exciting, right? And it's as exciting on a community and a business standpoint as it is on a technical standpoint.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. It's really has the potential to transform an industry. So how do you actually see Docker transforming the industry? What do you think it's going to do to the way people think about creating applications? Is this kind of the gateway technology to making 12-factor application building a reality?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope that it's the gateway towards sort of a new era of development where people really can develop anywhere and can be unleashed to develop amazing things without being sort of shackled by concerns of knowing in advance how things are going to run, where they're going to run. Our mission as a company is to build tools of mass innovation, which sounds a little corny, but we really do think it can be that significant. I mean, you know, stupid historical analogy, but you know, why was the printing press so cool? It's because it meant that the act of creating content and creating new ideas wasn't bound to your ability to, you know, produce books. And why was the internet so cool? Because it took it to the nth level. You didn't have to worry about the cost of producing books, and you could collaborate in creating things. You know, why else was the internet cool? Because you could send a message from one place to the other. You didn't have to worry about how it was getting from point A to point B. And we think we can kind of achieve all those things with the application world as well, right? Make it easy to create applications without worrying about how they're going to run. Make it easy to collaborate in the creation of applications. And ultimately, as Solomon says, you know, make running an application on the internet as easy as sending a message across the internet. And, you know, we send a message across the internet, we don't care which routers are between point A and point B. And I think to some extent we shouldn't care which applications which servers are our applications are going to run on, except in sort of highly secure types of scenarios.
Wow. So it could really build the bridge between developers and ops teams. It could combine those oil and water that didn't always work before.
Right. We're the soap that lets oil and water mix.
That's really cool. So what's next for Docker? What's on the horizon? 1.0 just came out. DockerCon was a huge success. Lots of interest. Do you guys share how many people are on Docker Hub? Is that one of your public statistics?
It isn't yet. I think we need to figure out what the good measurement is of it. We've had multiple thousands of people signing up per day, which is really exciting for us.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, I think Docker itself, you know, we talk about it, it's been downloaded 3 million times, 16,000 applications published to the Docker Index, 7,000 projects on GitHub. My favorite stat, though, is that we now have Docker meetups in, I think, 100 cities across 35 countries in every continent except for Antarctica. So if you know somebody in Antarctica,
you better get up to Antarctica. If one of our viewers is up there, let's do this.
We want to do it. We want to get all seven. But
so what's next? What's on the horizon? What's past what we can see right now?
Sure. So Docker 1.0 was a huge milestone, but on the sort of the Docker engine side, there's clearly a lot more that we need to do. Solomon spoke about some of the things that we're trying to do around libcontainer, libchan, and libswarm, which are all really important enhancements to Docker. So in general, that you'll be able to get much better at orchestrating containers in a consistent way, linking containers together, and dealing with things like storage and networking. On the Hub side, it also just released at DockerCon. We've got a huge list of improvements that we want to make, adding more collaboration tools, making it even easier to hook in tools like Jenkins or Bamboo or Chef or Puppet or Salt. I think what you're also going to see from Docker over the next several months, now that we've announced commercial support, is more and more use cases of people in places like financial institutions or Fortune 500s who are using Docker and talking about it publicly. We've had, you know, huge numbers of web companies like Gilt and Groupon and eBay and Spotify talking about their use of Docker. But I think that the more conservative organizations are waiting to hear from their own before they jump in, and a lot of them are now starting to jump in.
That's very cool. So it has been a real pleasure to have you on. It's really great to pick your brain and understand where things are going and how the industry is changing. I really look forward to continuing the dialogue and can't wait to see more. Solomon mentioned some stuff around security, and is that also in the future?
Absolutely. And I think we've also talked a little bit about this, but you know, if the future is lots of applications that are changing constantly, built out of components that are themselves containerized and moved everywhere, obviously security becomes a concern. We think that the right thing to do is to start by building that in at the container level, which means things like container signing, understanding where containers came from, who created them, when they were created, and what are some of the fundamental capabilities that the containers are asking for, right? So that it's really easy to build security around containers if you know where they came from, who created them, setting policies around whether you're going to allow containers root access or not, et cetera. So that's a yet that's another thing on our long list, but you know, DockerCon just finished. We're giving ourselves the weekend off, and then we're going to get going.
Great. Well, I am very, very happy. Thank you for your time, and it's been great talking with you.
Okay. Thank you, Lucas.